suspect. Hey, kids, Joseph J. Alexander coming with you with another White Heat Redux. Reason being, there was a pay-per-view this past weekend. And my Saturday night plans changed, so I was home. So I did end up watching it. I didn't say I paid for it, because no, but I did watch it. Oh God. I don't know where to begin. I mean, I suppose I'll begin at the beginning and we'll go from there. I did not catch any of Zero Hour, so sorry about that. And I did not catch the entire pay-per-view, I will be completely honest with you, because at some points, at one point my 7C's feed cut out and I was not able to get back in, and I had to jump to another ship to find another feed. I will say it like that. So I did miss a couple of things. And I had to go off of clips and replays in order to fill in the gaps on there. So for that, I apologize. But with that, now let's see. So we'll start off. Let's see. How did we get there? I'm just, I've got a couple of different tabs with my notes on the matter. And so I don't miss anything. So, oh yeah. So we open up with the, with the TNT Championship. Now, going into this, I would like to reiterate, what was the point in bringing back these quote unquote rankings when it doesn't matter? Like, they did these rankings where they were like, okay, here's all of our guys that hold belts and here's the top five contenders. They don't say contenders for what belts, but there's five guys there. And so you've got Christian Cage, who is supposedly the secondary champion in the company. And he's giving a title shot to Daniel Garcia, who was not ranked in the top five at all. Daniel Garcia was randomly ranked as one of the trios with FTR because they had a couple of matches. None of it makes sense. None of it makes sense. So we start off with Daniel Garcia getting shoved down our throats right from the beginning. Right near the beginning of the match, there was a spot where Garcia got tossed to the outside. And this is how you can tell Garcia has not been trained on how to work on TV. He can be an indie darling all he wants. He doesn't know presence of camera. Because he gets tossed to the outside, and not realizing that there is a mobile camera right there, he does the worst fake face bump I have ever seen, where he literally goes, slaps his hands on the mat and looks around and goes, oh, and then lays down. That is rookie Bush League bullshit. That is something that you do when there's only one camera. Like, a lot of these, like, indie feds, they'll do maybe a two-camera shoot. So there's ways to hide. They'll usually do a hard cam, maybe a hard on a ringside if they have someone good like Tanya Cornell. But you're on a pay-per-view. There's more than two cameras. You're not trained for this, kid. And you're, I'm sorry, but you're nothing special. You are nothing special. Then we go. And first thing I noticed right away was what was up with Aubrey Edwards? Why was she done up with the with her hair all done and looking like I swear I made this comment, and it may be a slightly bit insensitive, but it's just the first thing that popped to my mind is, why is Aubrey trying to look like Harlot of the Week? You're a referee. You are not there to draw attention. You are there as the backing piece. You are the cohesive unit to pull the match together. You are not the star of the fucking show. But no one wants to tell Aubrey that. And that's a fucking problem. And we get, at one point, I'm just looking at my notes. Christian goes for a frog splash, and they call it a frog splash. And I said, that is not a frog splash. That was falling without grace, because it was just, I don't know what the fuck it was. And we get a spot where Killswitch makes an interference spot and chokeslams Daniel Garcia. And then Killswitch, who is supposed to be a monster, who really should have been in I'll get to it later. This guy's supposed to be a monster, gets chased off by a short, stocky undercard guy, like chased away like a fucking Acme cartoon. It just makes him look like a total bitch. Like, what the fuck is going on here? Your monster is no longer a monster. He's getting chased away by Matt Menard. Christian ends up winning after four different interference spots in the first match. This is setting your tone for your entire fucking pay-per-view. The first match, four interference spots. The most there should be in a main event match is two interference spots. The most. And that's pulling it. It takes me back to one day when I was cutting commentary on a show that I wasn't managing on. And there was someone managing on the show that had no training in managing, but sweet talked his way onto the fucking show and literally did the manager hops up onto the apron to distract the referee spot seven times in a 10-minute match. I'm not going to give this person credit because they don't deserve to have their name spoken from my mouth. However, those who know me know the footage exists, and there is a very infamous match that I called. And I'll even say, I believe it was between, I think it was between Keith Mack and Wolfgar, where you will hear me utter the line, that kid is back on the escalator again. Kevin Smith fans, you get the reference. I'm sure the match is out there. I'm not giving any credence to the fuckwad that was the manager in that match, but I'm off on a tangent. You don't need that many distraction spots in one match. Like, it doesn't matter that you have an entourage. It doesn't mean everyone gets to do a distraction spot. That's not how that fucking works. That's not how that fucking works. It just angers me so much that everyone gets to just... It's inmates running the asylum. It's everyone in their own fucking sandbox in this company. And it's ridiculous. It is utterly ridiculous. And we're only one match in. Oh. So Christian goes over. The next match, the AEW Continental Crown between Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson. This is one of the matches where my feed cut out. So I had to go off of replays. But, and I've gone on record many times, I love Eddie. I know Eddie Kingston gets a lot of shit for a lot of different reasons, but I will maintain that above everything else, Eddie Kingston has an amazing mind for this business. Regardless, what do you want to say about his work? He has an amazing mind for the business. This was not a good match. And what did it go? 10 minutes? Like, really? Like, this is supposed to be the big blow off to these two facing each other in the tournament, and then this, that, and the other thing. And yeah, and the whole thing was Eddie's going to get Danielson to shake his hand. Well, excuse me. Point of order, Your Honor. Isn't 1/3 of the Continental Crown the Ring of Honor Championship? And doesn't the Ring of Honor Championship get defended under the Code of Honor? Because I believe they still observe that in the skeleton that is known as Ring of Honor right now. So if the Code of Honor is still observed, why would the stipulation be if this guy loses, he has to shake my hand when it's part of the fucking Code of Honor? And it was just like, people have seen the clips. I don't need to say anything more. It was plotting. It was slow. It was not a good match. And yeah, let's just move on, because there's no need to dwell more on that. Like, yeah. So then we get what we call the All-Star Scramble match. Now, I've got a lot of shit to say about the preface of this, like before, bro. So originally, we were supposed to have a quote-unquote Meat Madness match, which the graphic for the match featured Wardlow, Lance Archer, and Will Hobbs. That's it. Then we get this announcement from Tony Khan that due to several injuries, the Meat Madness match has been put on ice and it is being replaced by an All-Star Scramble match. And the All-Star Scramble match winner will receive an opportunity at the AEW Championship. Now, number one, the three guys who were in the Meat Madness match that were put on ice are in the Scramble match. So who was injured? Who was injured? Who? Apparently word comes out after the pay-per-view. Supposedly Miro was supposed to be in it, even though that was never advertised anywhere. And Miro says, well, I've been injured since September, but I didn't get any treatment for it till January. So he didn't know about the injury because he doesn't contact me. So number one, okay, Tony's a fucking idiot for not being in contact with his roster. But if Miro was injured since September, how was he on the World's End pay-per-view against Andrade? He didn't look injured there. There's just too many factors. And then, of course, apparently Keith Lee was supposed to be in this too, but Keith Lee is still injured. Whatever. This shows how Tony Khan doesn't know how to fucking book. Because if you really want to do a quote-unquote Meat Madness match, you want to have you basically want to focus a match around super heavyweights or just heavyweights in general. You could have done it. You could have still done it with Wardlow, Hobbs, Archer, Brian Cage, Killswitch, and EJ Nduka, who has been signed since fucking June. And you never see him anywhere. He did like one random ass match on Collision. The dude literally got signed just because Tony Khan didn't want him to go back to WWE. And that dude is a fucking diamond in the rough that could be doing so much right now. He's got $1 million fucking body. He learned how to talk when he was in MLW. He can work solid. And he's doing nothing. You could have had your Meat Madness match with those guys. But no, we got to do a championship scramble. Why? Because we got to make sure Chris Jericho gets on the show. And that's why. We got to make sure Jericho's on the show. That's all this was. And then, okay, so once again, why is there a ranking system if you're going to take 8 random people? Random! And I will tell you how fucking random it is when I go down this list. But 8 random guys and say whoever gets the first pinfall gets a fucking title shot. Because here's the people in the match. Chris Jericho, not in the rankings. Wardlow, okay, you want to push him. Powerhouse Hobbs, okay, you want to push him. Lance Archer hasn't won a fucking match in God knows how long, besides a random ass squash against fucking Commander or Serpentico or whatever. Hook, fuck Hook, fuck Hook, fuck Hook, fuck Hook. Brian Cage. When's the last time Brian Cage won a fucking singles match? Dante Martin. Seriously. You got no. You got to get in there to do flips. And Magnus. Who the fuck is Magnus? Oh, Magnus is another random CMLL guy that we just brought in who won a single match to qualify for this. So it's basically his debut in the company. But rankings matter. Rankings matter. Rankings matter, apparently. Here's a guy who's had one match, got into this, and he's about to catapult himself towards a shot at the AEW champion on his second day in the company. Lazy fucking booking. And the only good thing, the only notable thing that came out of this match is this. Here we go.
Dante, I believe that was Brian Cage who took out from him. Oh, damn it. Oh, what the hell? He got caught up on the ropes, but he still got it all.
He top dollared himself. Good on you. Just a solid fucking, yeah. This match was pointless. This match was a vehicle to get Wardlow over, which you could have, like I said, you still could have done the Meat Madness match. You could have had Brian Cage take the fucking pin and no one would have been, or Lance Archer, and no one would have been any the fucking wiser, and you could have gone on your way. But no, you were like, oh shit, I need to book Jericho, and oh shit, I need to just, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this match went too long, but we'll get back to that later. So in our next match, the International Championship. Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong. So the whole story going on here is Roderick Strong said that Orange Cassidy was a paper champion 7 weeks ago and said, I want you at 100% for this match at the pay-per-view. Then they put in all these roadblocks of Orange Cassidy facing everyone and their mother in the past 7 weeks so that he comes into this match injured. Okay, fine. If you want to play it as the card of the heel did something to wear him down, fine. But then you have Strong go over him clean. I'm not like it's. This belt is a fucking joke. It's the tertiary title in the company. It's there just because it's there. There's no reason for it. It was so Orange Cassidy could have a fucking title. And now it's so Roderick Strong can have a title. And then at the end of it, oh, look, it's Kyle O'Reilly. Fucking yay. Why am I supposed to care? And Kyle O'Reilly looks like he's going to jump Strong, but then they hug. And then Strong hands him an Undisputed Kingdom shirt. And Kyle O'Reilly goes, nah, I'm good, bro. But I still give you a hug. And then walks away. The fuck? What I feel like was the method to get the international title off Orange Cassidy so that way Tony can start pushing him towards the fucking main event now. Which... So then our next match... the big blood feud, because we don't know how to keep time on TV. FTR versus Moxley and Claudio. Now, here's problem number one. So, a couple weeks ago, Moxley and Claudio and FTR went to a time limit draw. They went to a 20-minute time limit draw. When just a couple weeks before, Swerve and Paige went to a 30-minute time limit draw. So what's the standard time limit on TV? Oh, well, it's whatever Tony says it is. Well, that's not how that fucking works. So then we go to a trios match, call it a trios match. It was just a six man because there's different rules, but no one seems to fucking know that in AEW. And they said, oh, there's still a 20 minute time limit. Then how come the match went 23 minutes? But that was all the lead to having this match on the pay-per-view. What's the stakes? But the biggest fucking embarrassment was this. What the actual fuck? Claudio and Mox coming to the ring in these fucking Tamu fucking from Wish fucking Road Warrior fucking shoulder pads. Like, who made these? They look nothing like the pads that the Road Warriors won. War. Ever. Like, and it just looks stupid. Like, if you're going to wear the shoulder pads, paint your faces. But the thing is, you should, like, this was literally just so it's like, oh, look, it's like the Midnight Express versus the Road Warriors. No, it's not. No, it's not. FTR can't get over the fact that they're not the fucking Midnight Express and they're not the fucking Brainbusters. Like, I used to be a huge fucking fan of the Revival. Ask anyone. Ever since they show up in AEW, I realize it. No. Thin-skinned motherfuckers who think their shit don't stink. And no, fuck them. Fuck them. And then the other side of the coin, you got Mox and Claudio. Claudio will always be a hell of a hand. But there's a reason he was never main event caliber. And I know it's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. But the dude can't talk. I love him to death, but the dude can't talk. And Mox, Dean Ambrose is light years beyond John Moxley, and I will leave it at that. The man needs to be produced. John Moxley is like Sacha Baron Cohen. If he's given direction, you can make money with him. If you leave him up to his own shit, it's terrible. So we have this match. FTR bleeds all over the fucking place. And at the end, Blackpool goes over. Eh. What good does this do? Is this to set up? Like, I feel like this is to set up the finals of the fucking... I'll leave it. So we move on. Next match, AEW Women's World Championship. Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo. And they do the fake out at the beginning by having Mariah May come out in Toni Storm's old gimmick to fake out everyone. Ooh. And you know something? That might have solicited a better response if it weren't for what you did in the main event. And I will get back to that because it's a vice versa situation. You did the same thing twice on one show. So then you got the match. And it happened. And that's all I got to say about that. I've never been a fan of Deonna Purrazzo. And this match was not good. And it got less than 10 minutes because that's Tony Khan. The women get a pre-show match and they get the women's title match on the pay-per-view. And that's it. That's all that matters. Just to remind you, all you want to bitch about WWE, the main event of that Australia show is the women's title match. And there was a chamber match for contentionship for that title as well. Y'all, we're going to move the goalposts every week to complain about something else with WWE. The one thing you can't complain about is the number of the amount of time they give to women's wrestling in between the two companies. But hey, we're going to focus on something else this week instead. Whatever. So, Then we get to the quote-unquote dream match of the pay-per-view, where we get Konosuke Takeshita versus the rape apologist Will Ospreay, making his official debut as a contracted AEW wrestler. Fuck Will Ospreay. There is a long fucking history going back. I can't believe how often I have to fucking talk about shit when it comes to fucking Will Ospreay that people don't seem to understand. For those of you who are unfamiliar, because it seems that, and this is where I need to go, I need to go off on a tangent, because people don't want to seem to fucking realize shit. And I'm looking for my record here on this. Everyone who wants to focus on the things going on right now with the allegations in WWE, and they want to claim that anyone who watches WWE is supporting sex trafficking and blah, 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 and all this shit. No. Vince McMahon is gone. They've handled that. AEW, however, keeps a plethora of sex pests on the payroll. For those of you who are unfamiliar, during the speaking out movement, there was a British wrestler by the name of Pollyanna who spoke out after leaving the business a year and a half prior because she got blackballed because she was raped by a person in the business by the name of Scott Wainwright. Will Ospreay helped Scott Wainwright cover that up. And then when she spoke out about it during speaking out, he came out and said, oh, look, there's people out here making up shit to get my boys in trouble. And that's why there were problems with the speaking out movement, because people chose to pick. It was a pick and choose matter of who they wanted to believe and who they didn't. But, oh, no, we can't. No, Will Ospreay is the savior of the flippy dudes. We can't. Fuck Will Ospreay. Fuck Will Ospreay. Fuck Darby Allin. But no, so we got Will Ospreay versus Takeshita. And Takeshita, dude, if Takeshita had gotten a chance to sign with NXT, they could make something out of that kid. That kid, he has so much potential. But no, he's gonna be job fodder. He's gonna be job fodder. He's gonna get a random win here and there, but he's gonna be jobber du jour. He has been since he got signed. Giving him a fucking win over fucking Jericho on a random ass Dynamite does not make him a made man. If that were true, remember Action Andretti? And I'm sorry, but Takeshita took 95% of the dangerous bumps in this match. Takeshita did 95% of the selling. That one spot where there was the wheelbarrow suplex and fucking Ospreay just gets up and fucking boom, nails. Like, no, I hate Will Ospreay. Even rape apology shit aside, I hate Will Ospreay because he's just a fucking no-selling spot monkey. I've said it before on here, and I'll say it again. There's a reason why people look back at that 6-star match in New Japan between Will Ospreay and Ricochet. There's a reason why Ricochet got a job with WWE out of that and Will Ospreay didn't. And I'm sorry, everyone says, oh, there's a bidding war. There was never a bidding war. Why? Because WWE, as a publicly traded company, can't put out fires like the shit Will Ospreay does. And Will Ospreay knows that he's fucking Tony Khan all the way to the bank. He knows that he's able to work a part-time schedule, still live in England with his fucking baby mama, and fucking come fly out to do fucking 2 shows a month and get paid fucking Matrix money. Fine. You want to work the fucking promoter? That's great, all and good. But stay the fuck off my TV, because you don't deserve it. You're a piece of shit. And of course, there was also the for those of you keeping track with the Dave Meltzer nonsense of the world, Meltzer published as news that during this match, there were WWE infiltrating fans in the audience who were chanting racist things at Takeshita. And how do we know they were WWE fans? Well, because supposedly they called Claudio and Mox Dean Ambrose and Cesaro. So that means that they're WWE fans and they were sent by... No, shut the fuck up. That is the dumbest shit ever. Maybe, just maybe, they were casual wrestling fans who only bought the tickets because they were there to see Sting's retirement. And they were like, oh, hey, those are those guys that used to be in WWE. And then some other people decided to start a take a shit fucking, you know, chant because, oh, well, it's because Cornette said it. MJF said it first. MJF said it first. So guess what? You ain't got shit to say. But nope, nope. We got to make it all about WWE. Got to make it all about WWE. Of course, Will Ospreay goes over. So then we get the triple threat for the AEW World Championship. Samoa Joe versus Swerve versus Hangman Adam Page. And we all knew that Swerve was going to get fucked in this one. Because as much as Swerve thinks that he believes this shit of Tony Khan's going to build a company around him and build a dynasty around him, Swerve is always going to get the short end of the stick. Tony Khan will keep telling him what he wants to hear throughout the duration of his contract to keep him there. But he's never going to make him the focal point of the fucking company. Why? Because Tony Khan's a fucking racist. Tony Khan is a fucking sucker for old school Ring of Honor. So that's why, of course, he's going to make Samoa Joe his champion. And he's going to keep that belt on over the hill, sloppy ass, slow ass Samoa Joe, who in this match lumbered around looking like the drunk fucking stepfather who fucking goes and drinks the orange juice out of the carton from the fridge at 3 o'clock in the morning and in the morning blames it on the fucking kid. And then smacks him upside the head. That's what Samoa Joe looked like in this match. And then you got Adam Page, who's supposed to be the fucking babyface. If no one fucking recalls going into this, Joe, heel, Swerve, heel, Page, babyface. But nope, we all got to cheer for Swerve because I swerve when I drop, and I swerve when I drop, and I swerve when I shut the fuck up. And then we got Adam Page. Supposed to be the babyface. Pulling the ref out to stop the count. Literally beating the ref in the match. And then the stupidest thing in the world. The stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard. That they tried to put forward as a narrative on commentary. That of course the stupid fucking lemmings picked up on fucking social media right away. Because stupid ass fucking sockface said it. They said, oh, Adam Page tapped out, not because he wanted to, but to make sure Swerve wouldn't win. Really? That's the fucking narrative you're going to try to push? Not dude was getting choked out and was losing air? Fucking stupid. 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 Swerve gets hosed, like we knew. Joe keeps his fucking title and then sits there during the media scrum and he's like, yeah, not anybody gets a shot anymore. There's a ranking system in place. Oh, except for that one guy that won a fucking scramble match. He gets a shot at me. Because that makes sense. Because that makes fucking sense. No. You can't have it both ways. You can't say there's a ranking system is in place, but then say random match guy gets a fucking shot. That's not how it fucking works. And then we get to the main event of the evening. The reason why everyone bought a ticket. Part of the reason everyone bought a ticket. And I will say part of the reason for this. People bought a ticket to this because it was Sting's last match. They didn't buy it for who it was against. They didn't buy it because of the stipulation. They didn't buy it because there was a title attached to it. Because there wasn't up until 2 weeks before it. They bought it because it was Sting's last match. AEW did not sell out the Greensboro Coliseum. Sting sold out the Greensboro Coliseum. So first we have the fucking Bucks come out. And I don't know if any of y'all else have noticed, but the Bucks' new entrance music sounds eerily similar to Roman Reigns' music now. Feel like that's projecting. You are not the needle mover that that man is, and you never will be. Just because you booked yourselves into this match doesn't mean you deserve to be in it. Just because you're the EVPs doesn't mean you deserve to be in the main event of a sold-out Coliseum. You had nothing to do with it selling out. Because, like, you literally until a few weeks ago, you were not part of that equation. This place was 98% sold before you stuck your grubby little hands in that fucking cookie jar. You had nothing to do with it. Nothing at all. So we get the fucking Bucks come out. And then we get Darby, the fucking abuser, to come out. And then the curtains draw and we get this Tron package. And okay, you know something? It was okay. You know, Sting sitting in the theater watching and seeing, you know, the pictures, which...
They had to use pictures because WWE wouldn't give them any footage.
They never asked for any. And they never asked for any footage from TNA either. It's not like he didn't spend fucking almost 10 years in TNA now, did he?
You fucking got him up there.
No, never tried. So, you know, Sting watching all this stuff, and then, you know, he's like, all right. Showtime for the last time. And then Sting's music hits.
Titus, enough.
Sorry, dude. Working. Sting's music hits. The AEW Sting music. And a spotlight comes on. And then, well, what we thought was Sting walked out. We soon realized it wasn't him. And then a second Sting walked out, which we realized wasn't him. And then the music stops and changes to Seek and Destroy by Metallica, which, okay, Sting used the Woodstock 99 version of that for like a month in WCW. All right, fine. But we get this visual. So that's Sting's two sons dressed up as Surfer Sting and Wolfpack Sting. Why they chose Wolfpack Sting over Joker Sting? I'll never understand. Because, I mean, Wolfpack Sting was just Crow Sting with red. Like, that's all that was. Like, So then we get to this match, which is the Tornado Tag. It's literally the only match this feud had. Because it was so roughshod and fucking ramshackle booking. So that the first match is for the tag titles and is a tornado tag, which it wasn't a tornado tag. It was a fucking death match is what it was. It was a fucking death match. Tornado tags don't involve weapons. Tornado tag is just all four guys in the ring. This was all four guys all over the fucking arena, plus two extra guys who were part of the match. Sorry, but Sting and Darby the baby faces. Why are Sting's kids helping beat up the Bucks? Not that I'm complaining, but still. And here come the weapons, and here come the panes of glass. Why? Why did we need this? And we get the setup, which we have seen. This is like... It's the same setup that happened during that Jeff Hardy match or in the Owen Hart tournament, where it's like, we're going to set up six chairs and a ladder and have a dude do a fucking senton off of the ladder into the six chairs. But, oh, let's add glass to it. Just so we can go through the glass and. Yeah. And fucking and just have it fly everywhere. And that's not the and that's the problem is that wasn't the only fucking glass spot. There were three glass spots. There was the one where they had the fucking pain where Sting went to go strike one of the Bucks and it didn't crash. So then Sting got mad and just whacked it with a bat and it shattered and flew into the fucking crowd. Then there was a spot with Darby where Darby got all cut up because he's a dumbass and he should have been wearing a fucking t-shirt like Sting was. And then there was the third glass spot where Sting took the ass bump into the glass in the corner, which caused a shit ton of glass to go flying into the audience. Now, people want to be like, oh, well, it was sugar glass. That's not sugar glass. If it was sugar glass, Darby wouldn't be cut up. Oh, well, it was tempered glass. So it's going, yeah, you know something? If tempered glass is so fucking safe, I'd like you to do me a favor. I would like you to find Bill Goldberg on social media and ask him how safe it was when he fucking sliced open an artery on tempered glass, bashing in the window of that limo on fucking Nitro that night. And apparently I haven't looked for them, but there are pictures going around of people who did get cut by the glass that flew into the audience. And everyone is pointing to the disclaimer that they put up saying, blah, 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 things flying in the audience, blah, 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 that they show at the beginning of Dynamite to the people in the auditorium. It doesn't fucking matter. And Dave Shearer wrote a very scalding article about it, which he was 100,000% correct on. And Darby and the Bucks and Sting and Tony Khan put people in danger. Like, yeah, when we ran shows, we always put that disclaimer on the back of blah blah blah. But you know, we know that doesn't hold up. It's a courtesy, but. People don't go to a wrestling show expecting to get injured themselves. If you get bumped into, if you get water thrown on you, yada, yada, shit happens. But the glass spots were gross negligence. And Tony Khan is going to get fucking sued. And it'd be like, well, it doesn't matter. Tony Khan's a billionaire. He can afford it. Go ahead. Guess what? The moment you fucking settle or the moment the charges get brought up, Warner Brothers Discovery is going to look at that and go, hey, you know something? This is the same fucker that lost us that sponsorship with Domino's because of the pizza cutter bit. And all we ever seem to hear is bad business practice stuff about him rumbling all over the place. It's contract year. Maybe we should back out. Just there was no point. To have the glass spots. None at all. None. And just. The whole match. It was just a garbage match. And it was really the culmination of everything Sting has done in AEW. Sting was never known for doing hardcore matches in WCW or in TNA. But all he's done in AEW is stupid ass fucking spots with dives and taking bumps through tables and no selling it. That's what I remember Sting from in AEW the most. Taking a table bump and standing right up. Because he's done it so many fucking times, I can't say remember that one time. And then the fucking Bucks. Because they're unoriginal. We know they're unoriginal, but they just have to show their unoriginality. Going for the spot where they're about to do the double super kick to Sting, and they go, we're not sorry. We hate you. And do the double super kick. Because they can't do anything for themselves. They've got to rip off a far better match. Michaels versus Flair was a fucking classic and an amazing way for Flair to have gone out if he had stayed retired. And that match was a straight wrestling match. It didn't involve any gaga, fucking ladders, fucking tables, fucking glass. None of that shit. None of it. None of it. So we've got Darby outside, cut up, getting Mantu so Sting can fucking no-sell everything for the Bucks. To the point where fucking Ricky Steamboat gets to take a bump. And Ric Flair goes in and covers up fucking Sting to harken back to the Revolution where Eddie did the same thing for Mox in the exploding ring match. Because I guarantee that's what Tony was going for there. And then Rick gets fucking super kicked. And then they put Sting to the table. He no-sells it. Bada bing, bada boom, bada boom, 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 boom. And Sting wins. Okay. There was no good outcome for this match. Legends and guys retiring should go out on their back. They should. However, they should be doing it for a good reason. There was no good reason for him to go out on his back. So therefore, there was no reason to go out on his back. Because it's the fucking Bucks. The only fucking thing that would have been okay, slightly okay, not even okay, but just made the most amount of sense in a whole plethora of nothing making sense would have been for Darby to have taken the pin. Sting and Darby lose the tag belts. Sting still never got pinned in AEW. And we go on our way. I'm not saying it would have been a happy ending. It would have been an ending. Instead, we get Sting and Darby. They win. Sting retires undefeated at AEW. Sting and Darby is a tag team. Never got beaten. Sting goes to give his farewell speech and gets cut short. Why?
Because the scramble match went too long.
That is the most AEW thing ever. Sting's famous last words. Oh, Darby's giving me cues.
It's okay because we live in an era where we can put the footage up on our YouTube and you can see it.
It doesn't fucking matter. So great. So everyone who paid $50 to watch this doesn't get to see it, but then everyone else gets to see it for free. Yeah, that's great. That's good business. And then, of course, we get the media scrum, which I was in the chat for the media scrum, and I was playing the Jim Cornette great game and just hitting ding, 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 ding in the chat, along with about 18, 20 other people. And, of course, Tony announces, oh, well, you know, now the tag belts are going to be vacated, and we're going to have another fucking tournament! Another tournament!
Because it's March. So this way, AEW can have a March Madness bracket too.
Fuck you. Nobody wants another tournament. This is like, someone pointed out, this is like the 30th fucking tournament in 5 years. It's ridiculous. And what I would like to know is, what was the point of putting the tag belts on Sting and Darby for this? What was the point? If they weren't going to lose them. Like, you could have let them retire undefeated without having the belts, because all you did was take the team of Bill Morrissey and Ricky Starks, who were just starting to get their groove as tag team champions, and just completely yanked them out of the scenario, cost them a pay-per-view payday. They weren't even on the pay-per-view at all. And they were completely yanked out for what? That match didn't need those belts. It wasn't a matter of this program needs the belt to get over. It was Sting's retirement putting the tag titles in it was putting a hat on a hat, making it a tornado tag, a hat on a hat on a hat, making fucking shards of glass, hat on a hat on a hat on a hat. There was no reason. Now we can have a tournament. So that way we can have the finals be fucking Blackpool versus FTR, right? Is that what we're going to do? So that we can have the fucking finals at the next pay-per-view, Dynasty. Pointless. Pointless, pointless, pointless. And just here we go with the fucking media scrum again of here come Tony's favorites out to fucking all talk. Here comes Tony Storm to act like an idiot and call out Wendi Richter again, which unless you're going to bring in Wendi Richter at some point, you need to stop that shit. You know, we're going to bring in Joe to fucking beat his fucking man boobs like he's fucking important. And talk about, you know, how great he is when, no, you've been past your prime for a long ass time, motherfucker. And you're proof that you, as the company champion, does not draw flies. There's a reason you were never given that shot in WWE, because Trips knew you're not a fucking draw. And then we got to bring out Sting and Darby. We're going to let Darby know. Oh, by the way, you've got a match next week. Oh, gee, thanks, boss. Even though Dark, because Barbie was like, I just got cleared by the doctor to go climb Mount Everest. Because he's still planning on doing that. Like a moron. Because that's what rich assholes do. That's climbing Mount Everest is not an accomplishment. Climbing Mount Everest is something rich assholes do. That's all that is. They pollute the fucking mountain so they can snap a couple of fucking pictures. Fuck you. But no, he's got a match against Jay White next week.
Well, let's hope you don't get injured, Darby.
That would just be a tragedy, because that would mess up your vacation plans now, wouldn't it? Which, by the way, I'm recording this on Wednesday, March 6th in the afternoon. I'm getting this up before Dynamite goes live tonight. However, it is 1 week away from Big Business. 1 week! And they have one match announced. Darby Allin versus Jay White, because reasons. And for those of you keeping track at home, they haven't even sold 7,000 tickets for that event yet. Remember, TD Garden, conservatively for wrestling, can hold 16,000, 15,000, say 15,000. They're not even at the halfway point. Also, news came out just in the past day and a half that Sammy Guevara has been suspended because he injured Jeff Hardy on February 14th. It's kind of odd. I mean, I'm no fan of Sammy Guevara, but they're saying it's because he ignored concussion protocol. Isn't that the ref's responsibility? So shouldn't the ref be suspended? You know, it is kind of strange, though, is Sammy Guevara has just been suspended right before the event where Sasha Banks comes in, so that they don't have to be in the same arena on the same night. Interesting. But she forgave him for that. No, she didn't. She never said, I forgive him. She said, things like this should never be said. She never said, I forgive him. So that means that Mercedes is already pulling clout and saying, I don't want to be anywhere near this fuck. Have fun, Tony. Have fun. But yeah, so we've got the post-Revolution Dynamite tonight. Dynamite tonight. It's a good Lordy song. We're a week away from Big Business, and they haven't done shit for fucking sales. And they're going to announce the tag title tournament. We're going to get our 4 week buildup for Wardlow versus Joe again. And I saw some of the dumbest shit online where I saw someone say the AEW Revolution 2024 has officially replaced WrestleMania 17 as the greatest wrestling pay-per-view of all time and will drag the casuals back in droves. No! I don't know what the fuck show you were watching. But there was nothing good on this show. Nothing. Nothing. I try to look for the positives in everything. There was nothing good on the show. Nothing. The only thing slightly good, the video package for Sting. Okay, I'll give you that. It was okay. Wasn't great. It was okay. Sorry about that. No, this was not a good fucking show at all. And that's all I really want to say about that. I'm tired of covering the show. I needed a couple of days to just cleanse my palate before going back and reviewing it. I will say I'm debating doing a redux on NXT Roadblock from this week. Jury's still out. We'll see. I do know that next week will be the debut of the first installment of JJ Chimes In. So keep an eye out for that. I know I said that that was going to be coming out soon. But yeah, besides that, I'm going to keep going. Like I said, March Madness is still going on. One of the teams Brian covers just went into their championship bracket. So Brian's still busy. Wish you luck. Love you, brother. But with that, yeah, we'll go on and we'll see you soon with whatever we decide to go with next. And y'all have fun with that shit. Later.